The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Good morning! Welcome to the 12th day of Christmas.
Yes! No, I was like...
Did you have to do some math there?
Today's, no, it's not math. I had to do some, like, yeah.
This today goes, is 12 drummers drumming.
Wait, when does this go?
Today's the 12th day of Christmas. Tomorrow's the Epiphany. When the Magi right, comes and we realize that God is manifested into the baby
yes,
Jesus.
I forgot the Epiphany. I love the Epiphany. Just because I love that. Because for your religion...
You love the Epiphany.
No, just because your religion...
You know what the Epiphany is?
No, but it's... what is
the
it?
The Epiphany is when the Magi, or the three wise men as we know them, yes. officially show up to see baby Jesus. They weren't there for the birth.
They weren't there for the birth? They missed it?
No.
And, it took them 12 days to come in?
No, actually it took them 2 years. See, a lot of people don't realize that when they saw the Star of Bethlehem, which, by the way, right. was seen in 2020 and will not be seen again by the naked eye until 2080.
Okay.
The Star of David. But when it took 2 years. They saw the star. It took them 2 years to get there on their camels. But this is when they showed up. And so it's always the day after the 12th day of Christmas. It's usually celebrated the first Sunday between January 2nd and January 8th in the Catholic okay. religion. So we will celebrate the Epiphany this Sunday. But this is the 12th day of Christmas, and that is the actualization of the Magi showing up with their gifts, and it is the realization of God manifesting himself into the body of baby Jesus. This is when everyone realized, oh my gosh, this is real. This is the Savior.
Okay, so this is... I'm your best friend, so this is not sacrilege, but yeah. I thought of something funny.
Yeah.
So they showed up. Jesus is a toddler now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Jesus is...
Oh, yeah, he's terrible twos. Right. Jesus is the terrible twos when the aunts and uncles show up. Yeah, he's ready to get after it. He's crawling on the floor playing with goat poop.
And,
yeah.
and they're like, oh, well, then right. he must be the Son of God.
No, this is...
That yeah. is great. I did not know that.
And so, you know... Ellen DeGeneres had this bit. I think it was Ellen DeGeneres. But she had this whole bit about funny. Imagine the birth of Jesus and your uncle show up. You're getting all excited because you think you're going to get Elmos. And they bring frankincense, gold, and myrrh. And they're like, thanks a lot. And they're like, what's up with these wise men? The wise men. What's up with the wise men? They never bring good gifts.
No.
And then she says, Jesus Christ. She goes, that's what we should name him, Jesus Christ.
So they brought the gifts, yeah. and Jesus is a terrible too. So Jesus may have had a temper tantrum.
Could have.
Because he's like, what flesh. Am I supposed? What am I supposed to
he's
do?
He's one
with
of
this?
Us. He's flesh.
Right.
He's one of
so
us.
They brought these gifts, and even other than the gold,
yeah.
the gold for a 2-year-old, the gold would be like a shiny little thing.
Sure, you could hang it above his crib.
Are we being sacrilegious?
No, because
I just think that's so. The Epiphany, though, was that the people.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it the wise men had the epiphany?
No, as the wise men showed up, it was the realization at that point in time that's where the world realized. And then of course, they traveled. They had to go leave because that's where King Herod decided that he had enough of this little baby Jesus and wanted to knock him out. I'm taking him out, kill every child under the age of 2. That's why every child under the age of 2 was
is this
killed.
Is this the angel of death in Passover?
No, this is just King Herod because he was threatened by the miracles that was happening, and he realized that he was not going to lose his power. And at this point, he was because Jesus was the king of the what?
Jews.
And Karen Herod was like, I'm the king. And so there could be no new baby Jesus run around here. So he went.
Whoa,
he went looking for baby.
So interesting.
Yeah, he went to Bethlehem looking for baby Jesus to kill him. And then realized that they got out, and he's like, okay, we're just going to kill every child under the age of 2.
That's the Passover.
Yes.
That's the great Passover.
That's correct. And they didn't pass over that.
No, but that's the whole thing with the angel of death and the Passover. Mm-hmm. Wow, look at us connected. We're brothers.
I know. I talked to a good Jewish friend myself this morning. We were talking about the whole Epiphany and situation. He's like, explain the whole Epiphany to me.
That is a great...
Yeah.
You know, because our story and you have 2 books, we have 1 book.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great, that's wonderful.
We have the badass God and we have the...
Yeah, we come from the badass. That's why we have neuroses.
Also, before we jump in today...
So much to come.
Today is Isaac Washington's 74th birthday. You know what Isaac Washington is?
No.
Ted Lang from The Love Boat. That's the only birthday I got today.
He's 74.
He's still alive. I'm surprised he's still alive. Isn't it amazing how
because Captain McLeod, he died, right?
Yeah, Gavin McLeod, yeah, he died.
What about the other guy, Gopher?
Gopher.
Isn't he in Congress?
Yeah, he's political. And then Julie, what's her face? I think she's
dead.
She may be dead.
And I think she had a drug problem, remember?
Yeah. And I think everyone that was on that show,
all the guests, they're all dead.
They should bring that. You know that there's a new Love Boat on.
So yeah.
There's first of all, there's a Love Boat commercial where they're singing the song. It's for some Caribbean cruise line.
Yeah.
And then there's some new show. I think it's on Netflix or something. I'm probably totally off here. It's called The Love Boat, and it's supposed to be. I used to love the Love Boat was on Saturday nights. They did the Love Boat,
and then Fantasy,
Fantasy Island,
and then Saturday Night Live.
The Carol Burnett Show was on Saturday. And that ran, and then Saturday Night Live, I think, was after the Carol Burnett Show. And the Carol Burnett Show was like an hour and a half. I remember because my mom would always go, you got to go to bed because I'd serve Mass on Sunday mornings at 8:30. You know, like, you're never going to make it. And I was like, Mom, I'm going to make it. And Carol Burnett was on from 10 to 11:30. Love Boat, 8 to 9.
Oh, because you were Central Time.
9
no,
to 10.
No,
yeah.
So we
I
were...
was Eastern Time. Cincinnati Time.
Oh, yeah. Right. So ours was... Love Boat was... No, that doesn't make sense.
Fantasy Island, then...
10 to 11
then,
for us.
Then Saturday Night Live, I went to bed Saturday. And then if you stayed up after that...
There was...
You got Love America Style.
Yeah.
Love
America Style. Now, Love America Style, you also got...
That was a great
show. You also got Love America Style. If do you remember being home, if you were ever homesick as a kid...
Oh, yeah.
You had two things, besides the soap opera. You had The Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
That would run. And then you had Love America Style. And... This is really weird. I always share weird stuff with you.
Yeah, you do.
Here.
I love it. Go for it.
So I can remember, if I think Love American Style,
mm-hmm.
for me, it is associated with a fever and a sore throat, but more so a fever kind of coming in and out of fever, like my son calls it a fever dream.
Yeah.
So I'd be laying in bed. I'm really sick. You know, I'm not really sick, but I'm not faking it. And it's like, whatever, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I don't feel good. My fever's running high. And then there's Love America Style. I'm watching the plot lines. And that was a nasty, like, that was...
Al Cooper says Twilight Zone was the best.
Oh, without... Twilight Zone, yeah.
You know what? I've seen some old... You can watch, like, on MeTV. You can watch MeToo TV or whatever. I don't know what's called. MeToo TV.
Yeah.
You can watch, and the show's still good. I've actually... You cannot find Love America Style. You can watch it on YouTube. It was really, really, really racy for its time.
Oh, yeah.
Now, my mom and dad would not allow me to watch Love America Style because there were a lot of sexual overtones. Now
right.
It's nothing. And it was just really quick. If you ever get a chance, do it after the show.
Yeah.
Andy Morgan, good morning to you. Do it after the show. But go check out Love America Style and you'll watch it. And it was just really short,
yep.
2-3 minute clips.
Yep.
Of catching people in rooms with other people and blah, 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 blah. It was almost like a laugh-in, but it was... It was a great
that
show.
That little TikTok flavor.
And then, of course, Hee Haw was the show that everyone could watch, despite the fact that it's had more sexual show. My dad would watch Hee Haw because we made fun of Southern people. Because it was
you
up
did?
Well,
because
you we were in Cincinnati.
Well,
we were Yankees. And so we would watch it because those damn Southern people. And, of course, we all thought the Southern people were barefoot and just had their boobs hanging out the entire time.
We did, too.
We thought Grandpa was great.
We did, too.
You know, now where are you tonight? My dad would sing that, and my mom would hate it. And then after about 10 years, my mom realized my dad was watching to see the women
with
Pearl. The boobs. Mini Pearl, yeah.
With the little thing, yeah.
Roy Clark.
No, and, see, my dad was a big bluegrass music fan. Roy Clark and
Owen,
Buck Owens.
Yep. Yeah, that's good. Speaking of the 70s, also today is National Bird Day.
Mm.
We're going to talk about your Deer Chronicles just because I want to help you. You help me, I want to help you.
I got a new.
You should put the Curry and Claypool show on your Deer Chronicles and help our show. By the way,
I can.
National Bird Day. Today's Monopoly Game Day, and also today is National Whipped Cream Day. Woo-hoo, Whipped Cream Day. We should take some of that out and celebrate a little bit. Not you and I. Also, on this date in 1975, Fleetwood Mac's album went gold and platinum. And why do I bring this up? I always talk about everything's in God's time. It takes time. You do things, you work at them for 3, 4, 5 years. I mentioned Starbucks. Seems like it just opened 10 years ago. It's been open for 50 years.
Yeah.
They finally just got to the point where they're huge. 50 years. It's been around since 1971.
I think the difference is now they're and as a Starbucks loyal. They are like McDonald's. They're at every...
Yeah, but it took 50 years to get there.
Yeah, yeah. So you got time.
And people have been drinking coffee for hundreds of years.
Right.
It was just so happened that coffee is now...
Thousands of years.
Thousands of years. The album contained the first songs, Over My Head, Rihanna, and You Make Love and Fun, which the amazing thing is, it was the first time that Fleetwood Mac ever made the top 40 in 1975. You're like, okay. It was their 10th album they put out. Fleetwood Flippin' Mac, which is probably one of the top five bands of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
Christine Vitas died. We talked about her for a week and a half. It took 10 albums.
Yeah.
Knowing that it takes years to put an album out, it took 10 albums
well, that's why they
to
were
get
all
their first top 40 hit. Just think about that for a second. Yeah. When you think of Fleetwood Mac, you think of these bands that come out with one album and it goes gold and then they're off the face of the earth and it's very hard to stay up with that and they get thrown out by the record.
It's
their 10th album. Could you? What have you done recently that you have done once, twice, three times, four times, five times, six times, seven times, eight times, nine, and you're like, this just ain't working.
Well, no, so that's really interesting. Because if you think about businesses, right? Yeah. So you think about startup business, right? So startup businesses, most of them fail.
Huh?
And they typically fail.
70% of them.
Right. They typically fail within the first year to 2 to 3 years.
17 months.
Right. Okay.
I know this because I do a show with Michael Cohen called Mission Minded. We talk about it all the time.
So there's always this point, and it gets complicated when you have a venture capital backing, right? Mm-hmm. So there's an entity putting money into it.
Yes.
So it's artificially successful, right? And I think it's really important because I work with a lot of these companies. It's really important to understand or to remember that the feeding of the money in is with the hopes that it will generate on its own.
Yeah.
But during that time, you look successful, but you're essentially losing your spending money. Okay.
Sure.
When is the point, like you said, but when is the point, if you've got backing, that you go... You or your board member said, this is not working.
Right?
Because it's a weird, you know, is it now? Is it next year? Let's give it one more year.
Do you want to be the pit bull with the rag? Or do you want to realize that maybe there's two things. Timing and your idea. Is this really a good idea, what I'm doing?
Right.
Is this really, I thought, wow, this is a great idea. This is super good. Are people bypassing you with that idea? And that's happened here on Tony Curry Radio a lot.
Yes.
That's fine because I hate the word small business because I consider myself perceptually a lot larger because we're international. But while I'm doing things, I don't have millions of dollars that I'm sinking into it. If I did,
well,
it'd be super successful immediately. But I also don't want to deal with venture capital. I don't want to have to deal with investments. I don't want to deal with paying people back. I'd rather grow it grassroots and grow it up and make the money and keep it here in-house and then hire as I go and grow as we go.
Which is a different model.
As opposed to get $1 million, hire 8 people on staff, and then I have to deal with all that stuff because I'm one person. The idea... And then the timing. And a lot of times, people come up with great ideas, but they're before their time.
Yes.
Now, you don't ever want to come up with the idea after their time, and we know life is cyclical. And I'll use LPs as an example.
No, because you know what happened.
Because you know
what happened in my house at Christmas.
LPs have been making a comeback for 35 years. Hold on to your LPs. Hold on to your LPs. Hold on to your baseball cards. All this stuff because it's all cyclical. And now we're finding out that we've sold more LPs in 2022 last year than we had sold since like 1974.
Okay? Because you can get them online.
Because it's sexy and nostalgic and sentimental and people want to buy this stuff again. And artists now, every artist that comes out, Taylor Swift, her new record.
But it's not. But it's not just nostalgic.
Yeah.
No, it's not just us buying it. I told you the whole conversation at my house.
Yeah.
There's an out, there's pictures in it. No, but here's the other thing with the business that I think is really important and interesting, because you keep talking about good idea and timing.
Yep.
The good idea part is really difficult psychologically because particularly if you are the founder, if you and let's just say a circle of your co-founders believe that this is a good idea, and you're passionate about it, you know, kind of some of the messaging you'll get sometimes is you just stick with it because you believe it's a good idea. And one of the things that
because you believe it's a good idea.
And so one of the things I have to do a lot of times is work with founders to say, you believe it's a good idea, your team believes it's a good idea, the market does not believe it's a good idea. And it may not even be a timing thing. It may be that the market is not interested in this. And so for me, what gets really important and interesting is it's not so much closing up shop. Are you willing to pivot? Are you willing to branch off? You think this idea is great. Mm-hmm. The market says, we're not interested in that. We're kind of interested in this little part you have over here.
Yep.
But you're like, oh, that's not really good. Are you able, psychologically, because you put so much into it, to make the shift and embrace not what you believe in,
yeah,
but what the market will do? That is so much easier said than done.
You used to do a show called Adapt or Perish.
Yes.
Right? And it's with Dr. Alex Hubelin, who may be watching this morning. Yes. And it was a great show because it would help you adapt, because a lot of people are like, no, this is the way I'm doing it. I'm not changing. And if you're not going to change, you're not going to be successful. It's the guy who opens the soul food restaurant in a really nice part of town, wants to bring that culture,
yep,
that, whatever, and he comes to realize that everyone's coming in for his chocolate cake and not so much his jerk chicken or whatever he's selling in soul food.
Right.
And then you're like, okay, don't wait a minute. If they're really coming in for this particular thing, do I want to start expanding that aspect? I did it here in the business.
I know.
I started a classic rock station. I started doing things. I was throwing spaghetti up the wall. I was doing shows and all kinds of things. And then we started our podcast network about a year and a half ago. Here's the thing. If you're starting a business and 1.5 million people start a business every single year, 70% of them fail within the first 15, 16 months, usually because they run out of money. Mm-hmm. Because they think, well, I'll start making money, I'll sink the money back in, it'll just get bigger and bigger and bigger. It usually doesn't work that way. The thing is you must get out your comfort zone and your circle of friends, because when you're sitting there talking, I got this great idea for a classic rock station.
Oh, it's great. All your friends
are going to blow smoke up your ass because I'd go for it, man.
Yeah.
You are the classic rock. This is going to be perfect. This is going to be great. And you start, okay.
Yes, exactly.
All right, then. You should go sell those pies and open up a brick and mortar.
Yes.
You already sold 20 of those pies to your friends at the tailgate. You could sell thousands of those pies outside Bryant Denny. Right? And next thing you know, you realize that you're going to open a business. You're going to do a business. And then, you know, all the intricacies and the taxes and everything that comes along with it. And who's going to make these pies and how you're going to serve these pies and how you're going to market these pies. And if you really want to... And then you have to get, and Michael Coleman, who's a good friend of mine, was formerly the Jimmy Hale Mission, now runs the Montgomery Area Food Bank, MAFB.org, if you want to give to them. They serve 35 counties in the state of Alabama. He does wonderful work. He always talks about, you've got to be willing to be criticized. You've got to go outside your comfort zone and say, hey, I've got this idea. What do you think? Mm-hmm. And be ready to hear the response and the criticism in that, because a lot of people go, dude, okay, you know, if that's what you want to do, and ask questions. You know, you have to be willing to be bludgeoned to death with your idea.
Yeah, well,
I don't see how this is going to fly, or da 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 da. And in some cases, I'll bring up an example.
You can't do that.
I got to be kind of careful. This couple wants to start a non-for-profit.
Yeah.
And they're trying to figure out how to get it off the ground, and it's a great non-for-profit, helps individuals with special needs.
Hmm.
And they start setting up meetings with other non-for-profits to see how they run their business and if it's a good idea, which is a great idea. That's great.
That's how you should do it.
And they get meetings with really big high executives who run really big non-for-profits.
Right.
Because they have connections. And there's one person who runs a super successful business here in Birmingham. Super huge.
Oh, now you just got...
If you drive through downtown, you can't miss it.
Oh.
And somehow they get a meeting with this guy.
And the guy.
They start serving up their vision, their passion,
yes,
their love for this new thing they're going to do. And the guy says, he's compassionate. He's like, I love anytime someone wants to serve that special needs platform, that's wonderful. It's beautiful. Okay, so, and he starts throwing out the hard questions.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to start a school?
Because
originally this couple wanted to start a school.
Really?
And he's like, okay, we're going to have this school. And who's going to be your backers? Who's going to build it? And do you have a timeline? And you know, we're at that point, this couple is just kind of feeling their way through. They don't have a business plan. They just know they have a passion for this because they've been directly affected by it.
They got a little floor. Yeah, there's a little Freudian slip.
Yeah. That couple can't answer the questions. They can't answer the questions. No. Well, we haven't really thought that far through.
Yes.
Well, maybe come back and say, well, we're here, so let's just talk about what we need to do. And we're kind of asking for some mentorship. Maybe you can kind of help us through those areas. Do you know anyone that can help us do this, that, and other?
That's a good quick pivot.
Yeah, and this person doesn't really, this person's got their plate full.
Yeah.
Because they just built this new building and they're busy. They're out making their own money for their own cause. And goes as far to say to one of the people in this meeting, you know, you're like a pit bull with a rag. You're just not going to let it go, are you? Mm-hmm. You're not going to let it go. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you know, it's kind of like, shit or get off the pot. Mm-hmm. No, we're not. This is something we want to do. We're passionate about. We believe there's a need for it. We're going to do it. And he's like, good for you. Let me know how it goes. I'm here for you if you ever need me, but good luck.
Yes. But you see a lot. Like, and that's, I mean, I think, yes.
And that should have been the first, not failure.
No.
Learning moment where we go, okay, we've got a lot of work to do. If we're really going to do this, passion ain't going to push us through. We're going to have to figure out a way to make these connections, and it may take years.
Right.
But we don't have your, well, that's the timing and the idea where they have to come together. And instead, that motivation, that passion turns into a little anger, and then you start pushing harder than you probably should to the point where it's beyond passion, it's beyond, I'm not going to be told I can't make this work, and I'm going to make it work. And it happens all the time.
So that, and that's another one. Now listen, I see this a lot. Mm-hmm. There is the feedback that doesn't go the way that you want.
Yeah.
It usually is calling out.
And let me tell you something. There's nothing worse when someone has a great idea. Oh. And you call someone and you think they're going to go, dude, I can't believe I didn't think of that. And they just absolutely
you know, it was called for me. That's called graduate school. Mm. Oh, my God, I'm going to change the. I have this brilliant idea for a psychological intervention that's going to change the mental health. And you hand it. They're like, no, go try it again. Yeah. But I think in that moment, it's the way you describe it is really interesting, because in this moment when you get that feedback, And they start poking holes. If there aren't really, if they're poking holes, but you can address them, you don't get the same. You don't have the same reaction.
Yeah.
It becomes more like it's more like it feels more like a sport. Hey, well, what about this? Well, this is what we've done. And well, what about this? Well, here's what our plan is. But when they start poking holes, and you know down here that there's nothing to fill, you have like three ways that you can go psychologically. You either can embrace it, albeit painful, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. You can be pummeled sort of by it. Oh my God, you know, I'm a failure. Or what a lot of people do is you don't understand what we're trying to do. You just don't get where we're going with the mission. And the problem is, if you can't find that middle, that one where you embrace it despite the discomfort, then all you're doing is bullshitting yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But you do it in the name of, this is the problem. It's in the name of something, my passion, my vision, whatever. And what you have to do is you have to be able to say, it's my passion and my vision. Again, there's nothing wrong with that. But at least this person doesn't like it. And so maybe you go to another person, or maybe you go to another funder. But at some point you go, you know what? We've been to 17 funders or 17 people.
They're all bringing up the same point.
And they're bringing up, yes, and they're bringing up the same point. And that's though a point where it goes from something that's very kind of outside business, whatever, to intensely personal.
Yeah.
It's so personal that all, it's like a relationship. Our defense mechanisms get up there. Our twisting of the truth gets up there,
and you're asking for the advice. I mean, you're the one setting the up. So I mean, you're not going in for affirmation. You're going in to find out whether this business is going to.
But
you want some affirmation.
That's exactly.
But I mean, in this particular case, this is what happened. We had this blind meeting, and he told us the truth. And the truth happened. And it could take all the passion, all 26 hours a day, and we weren't going to find it until, you know. And again, it takes time. It depends
on what you're saying. But the Fleetwood Mac is a good example because they did 10 albums.
They believe in themselves.
Well, they believe in themselves. And I obviously don't know. Obviously, there was enough support, whether it was their own support, success, that they got through 10 years.
Yeah.
And that's what I also think is interesting is when you kind of hobble along as a company, you don't go out of business.
Yeah.
But you don't have, you know, we're going to take over the world, and after 10 years, you're still kind of going. You haven't failed. You know what I mean?
That's where your vision is, too, because a lot of people don't want to take over the world.
Well, or we're going to be successful, but for 10 years, you're not as successful as you wanted to be.
Yeah.
Again, Fleetwood Mac, one more album. Okay, oh, look, well, we got one more. At what point, and this is what I think is so interesting, at what point, you know, after 10 albums, do you go, God, maybe we're never going to be any more than this, and boom, then rumors.
And then you throw in the fact that they were loving what they were doing, and if they were making
ends
meet, they were living in the back of vans, staying in CD hotels, and it sucked, because I know what it's like to be, I haven't been in bands, but I've been around bands long enough to know that they go through really tough times. The other thing is we like to see a succession of progression, and that is to say, we want to say, if we sell 100 albums the first time, we better sell more than 100 the next time.
That's right.
And then higher and higher and higher, and that just doesn't work.
No, it's like this.
There's ups and downs.
There's ups and downs.
What the hell, I worked even harder this year, my numbers were down. Why is that? Well, sometimes it's a timing thing, sometimes it's an ID thing, maybe you're putting too much acknowledgement or thought process in something that's not working, and you're taking away from things that are.
Listen, the greatest, you need to have on your team, they always say you need to have a naysayer.
Mm-hmm. No.
Fine. No, you do. I like that. I like to have somebody.
Not a pessimist. Team. Not somebody who's negative, but someone that questions everything.
That you're gonna, but then I think the other thing is you have to have somebody on your team. Even if they're not the founder of the business, somebody on your team who is the reality checker. Not the naysayer, the reality checker. And what they're saying is, hey, look, this was really good, but this was not really good.
Yeah.
And how do we want to move from that?
Yeah.
That's what I do here for Tony Curry.
There you go. And that's why I love you. That's why you're here. Good morning to JD Lyons down in beautiful Delray, Florida. JD's a good friend of mine. Yeah. He's making me one badass backdrop. Oh, you haven't seen it yet.
No.
Oh, my God. We're going to have a new backdrop here. And by the way, thanks to Al Cooper from Coosa Valley Auto Sales, who gave me a little backdrop this morning. He's been like, where's my damn sign? Why didn't you put my sign up there? The old rock and roll sign.
I love that.
I got that from the Blue Herring, which is right next to Coosa Valley Auto Sales. He's got a great gig up there. He does the customer co-op for the thing.
Oh, tell me about that.
And then while he's shopping for the car, while she's shopping for the car,
because
sometimes the woman shops for the car too, then the guy can go over to their great craft art shop. It's like a... It's not a flea market. It's just odds and ends, stuff that you won't find anywhere else. He does a lot of picking himself. It's a great place. It would have been perfect for Christmas or any time to check out the Blue
Cool and Campy?
Cool and Campy, yeah.
Yeah.
You'll find something in there you like. So thanks to, of course, Coosa Valley Auto Sales and, of course, JD Lyons for checking us out this morning. JD's just getting over COVID as well.
Oh, no.
He's been inviting me to come. Marla Maples is his neighbor. And I actually thought I had a shot. I was like, hey, if I come down there, will you introduce me to Marla Maples?
Oh,
I was like,
sure.
60-something like that. She still looks really good, though.
You
I don't know what the hell happened to Donald Trump.
Marla
Maples was a
good but Donald Trump was never, even in his youth, he wasn't a great-looking guy.
No, he's never. That's what I'm saying. Maples was like a...
Oh, yeah.
During the time was like...
Yeah.
She looked like she was a lot of fun, so... All right, something I want to get into. We'll be on Fox 6 coming up about 45 minutes at 9:30 this morning. Thanks to Mike Doubley and, of course, Janice Rogers and the entire crew for having us on. We have a great partnership with Fox 6. Every Thursday morning we're on for about 5 or 6 mornings. Peggy Bonfield, remember Peggy? Good morning, Peggy.
Good morning, Peggy.
She's been around for forever. I actually catched up with her around the holidays, and she's a wonderful lady.
You're like romper room sometimes.
No, I love it. She's into all kinds of things, too. She's trying to get me to sell some stuff, and we're going to get her on the air and get after it.
Great.
We have spoken, obviously, a lot about the Damar Hamlin situation, but we have not actually done a show about it.
I almost did.
And you knew all this stuff was coming out because the first moment it comes out, thoughts and prayers, and I got so tired of hearing, and I love Van Pelt on ESPN, I got so tired of hearing, it's inconsequential that we're talking about whether the Bills and Bengals are going to play this game, and it's inconsequential to score, and it's inconsequential to play that. Right now, it's all about the health of DeMar. No shit. You don't have to tell me that. I know. A guy almost died. He died twice on the field.
They have to say that.
No, they don't.
What do they say instead?
They took six straight hours and talked about the health of DeMar Hamlin.
But what would
night.
They say?
You don't need to mention it's inconsequential. We realize the severity and the
diet. Well, do you think they should have covered other sports then?
No, I'm not saying that at all. But stop telling me that the game's not important. I realize that.
Yeah. Well, okay. They're resetting. You do then. Sports resetting. You just watch too much.
No, I don't. I'm at a point where I know a man almost died on a football field. I realize the game's not important, and I realize that they're not. Mm-hmm. But there will be a time where we'll set in to what's happened. It appears he's going to live, which is a great thing. And the minute we know he's going to live, then it opens up. Was the hit illegal? Should we be slamming on T. Higgins? And all the peripheral, the reasons like that is we need new material. We can't keep talking about thoughts and prayers and thoughts and prayers because it's old
but
news.
Think about, God.
So we need to break the story down, and we've done this with a Cam Newton story. We've done it with Pete Rose. We've done it. You get the story. We know it. We feel good about it. We know he's going to be okay. It's super sad. And then we got to, it's the tree. Okay. DeMar Hamlin's the thing, and we got to start building branches up.
But
okay.
Are you talking to me?
Should we change? No, I'm just explaining why so many people are getting pissed off right now.
Are you talking to me as Tony Curry, or are you talking to me like in this as a...
I am Tony Curry, so I'm talking to you about...
No, but the branching, I mean, because this is, if you're on ESPN...
If you're talking about something that happened a week ago, you better have a different take on it.
Well, that's what I'm saying, and at some point, with something like this...
If we sit here and say, our thoughts and prayers continue to get... Yeah. We're done.
Well, you know what they're covering now? So what they're covering now, obviously they're doing updates on his health, right? And even that, you know, there's good signs, which is great. I mean, it's great, but
he's getting better every day.
Yes, but better...
He's going to live. He's going to live.
We think.
Yeah, he's going to live.
No, we think. No, but so like what I saw this morning...
His doctors are saying that.
What his quality of life is, we don't know yet.
Yes.
But so what I saw this morning, where the deeper dive was his foundation, Toys for Kids, mm-hmm. which I guess at the time, you know, he's only 24 years old, it had like... $2,000 and now it has $6 million.
He had a $2,500 goal and it's over $7.6 million.
Right. So now the angle is, and they're interviewing his best friend about how we're going to diversify and all this kind of stuff. And what I know.
See, I mean.
Well, because it's what you just said. It is what you said. If we weren't talking about news.
Yeah.
If we were just talking about you and I talking about this. We may not talk about it in the next hour.
Yeah.
Because we're just talking. But if it's on a media platform, mm-hmm. they have to cover, they have a choice. They either can cover the story, right? Or they can move on to something else. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I'm sure there are people that, we got to stay on the story, we got to, but they are running out of things to say. Yes. They cover the vigil, mm-hmm. the vigil's there. Mm-hmm. They've talked to any friends and family. Mm-hmm. And so now there is the point of interest is that he's got $6 million in this thing. Mm-hmm. But it's all because you have to feed the beast.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I'm not saying. I'm just explaining to people why people go down these routes.
Yeah, no.
The whole death threats on T. Higgins.
Yeah.
And DeMar's father's like, stop. Stop it all.
Yes.
And I was telling my son last night, he's getting death threats. I said, you know what, Santo? Everyone gets death threats. If you do anything that goes viral, you're going to get death threats. Right, I don't get, Mother Teresa got death threats.
Well, yeah.
Elon Musk gets death threats. Yeah, it doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter whether you're doing something good, bad, nasty, wonderful, sacred, whatever it is. You're going to get...
It's a numbers game. It's a numbers game.
Because there's 8 billion people on this earth. 6 of them got social media. So everyone's got a voice now. When all we had was newspapers, you didn't hear about the death threats because the only way you could try to kill somebody was writing them a fucking letter saying, no. I'm going to kill your ass. Or and that had, didn't make it to the newspaper 3 days later.
You had two choices.
Now you can tell someone I'm going to kill you within 30 seconds.
No, but you have two choices.
Yeah.
You could op-ed or a classified section.
Exactly.
Remember the classified section?
Yeah.
You could take out a classified, but I guess there's a filter there. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, the other thing that's rearing its head, because now we have, in addition to all the social media platforms, we have all, within each of those, we have all the live pieces. So there are Twitter spaces. And I saw that there was a Twitter spaces going on the other day about, I can say it here, calling into question the COVID vaccination and if this is what caused his heart problem. Yeah. And it was an entire conversation about, see?
Yeah.
You see what happened?
It's a good,
really?
But you know what? We're at the point in the story.
Right.
Where we're going to start questioning these things because, like you said, we have to find new information. What's the angle we could take on the story? We can't just sit
there. Well, you and I talked about it for Fox.
I know.
What's the angle we're going to take?
We can't just sit there and say it was a horrible hit. It was terrible. They may change the game. Our thoughts and prayers go for him. We're done. We have to have a different original take on it and because otherwise it's boring because everything's been said already. And so everyone's wanting to take a new hit. And that's a really interesting take. That's something I'd probably hear in NPR. And they could probably get a whole piece out of that. And the thing is if you're going to do it, you better go for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you get into a take and you're like, this is a take, you got to own it. You got to own it 110% and you better believe in it. And a lot of times people go, you didn't really believe what you said. Listen, if I'm going there, I better own it because if I go halfway and back out, it falls flat on its face.
Well, I told you, I told you what I think, and I've, you know, you and I, anybody who watches sports have seen, horrific injuries in a variety of sports. Yep. You know, the compound fractures.
I'm glad you brought this up. Go ahead.
Yeah, the compound fractures. The someone who loses consciousness. I'm not talking about just football. So this is anything. You know, the concussion, the head split open, and it's really interesting in sports because there's definitely, and let's just say at the pro or the collegiate level, you know, there are certain injuries you're kind of used to seeing. Mm-hmm. It's still bad, but you're used to seeing someone who maybe dislocates their shoulder. Okay. But then there's always that injury where you see players, you see two things. You see players will take the knee. Again, it's not just football. But the other thing, and I always dial into this, the one where you look, the look on the players' faces is of terror.
Yeah.
It's terror, it's tears, it's I've seen players throw up. Mm-hmm. I've seen all of it because what they're witnessing is a traumatic event. It is a traumatic event. And when you watch the response on their faces, and this is what I was texting you, it is not unlike the same response that you see when someone witnesses a family member in a car crash.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody witnesses or lives through a tornado and somebody dies. And what you see, it's called acute stress reaction, but the reason that it's important is when you see that level of response, I am telling you as a psychologist, some percentage of them, and we know that there's some percentage of those players who they will all be forever impacted. That's not what I'm talking about, but who will have significant psychological problems. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying they're going to be crazy, but I'm talking about post-traumatic stress. I'm also talking about the ability to come back and play at a high level. There are a lot of these professionals, it is going to be extremely challenging.
Yep.
Don't tell me they will put it behind them because they're pros. Are you kidding me? And the reason that this is important is when we talk about the kinds of events that cause that reaction, it's always the same criteria. It's outside the realm of normal, we call it normal human experience, but it's normal you experience. If you're a football player, you're used to hearing violent hits all the time. You're used to seeing people dislocate their shoulder. You are not used to seeing that. You're not used to seeing spinal cord injuries.
No, and I will, you know, I got into whether we should allow our kids to play at a particular competitive level, and we can certainly get into that. But, you know, you said it earlier in this this job here. It's a numbers game.
Yeah.
This is an incredibly rare situation.
Absolutely.
And I would hope that the majority of football players would say, listen, it was right at a heart arrhythmic area that was one millionth of a second. And he was hit just at that right moment. And that's what happened. I do think it's going to be interesting to see what the National Football League does, because I know they've all been about safety. We talked about targeting, and if you have a helmet, right. I was just talking to my son a couple weeks ago, and it's been brought up many times. The targeting penalty is not just a defensive penalty. And in many cases, it's more so because the defender is seeking out and hunting that offensive player to tackle. And so when they drop their heads,
right.
Jay Barker's told me so many times to run through the tackle, keep your head up. Not just for the safety of the player being hit, but for your safety as well.
Right.
In T. Higgins' situation, I'll mention this. You watch, targeting happens about 100 times a game.
Mm-hmm.
Not from defensive players, but from offensive. Every time the running back gets the ball,
right.
What do we tell? Put your head down. Right. Put your head down and push through.
Right. It's not funny.
Yeah. It's another part of your body that pushes you and your trajectory, your compulsion. Yep. Of putting your head, it's just a natural reaction to what most people do when we run through things. If
right.
I jump in a leaf pile, I put my head down, even though I know it's going to be a hell of a lot softer than hitting a 325-pound lineman. Right? You put your head down.
How often?
We don't run into a wall with our head up. We don't. You put your head down because you're trying to protect the rest of your body, knowing.
How often do you jump into leaf piles?
Oh, dude, I used to jump into leaf piles, man. I put my head down all the time.
No, it is.
So I think it's going to be really interesting to see if the National Football League is going to be woke enough to go, okay, we're going to start calling penalties on players that put their
head
down. Because a lot of times, if you're an offensive player, you're putting your head down, quite frankly, because you're one guy and you're getting tackled by six.
Yeah.
You want to get our first reaction. What the hell do we do when you're about ready to be in a plane crash?
Protect your head down.
And the first thing I'm thinking is, I'm not putting my head down because the first thing that's going to snap is my neck. I don't want to put my head down. By the way, I went to Woodhouse Day Spa yesterday. Thanks
to
you.
Oh, that's right. That's why you're so chirpy.
Adrian did me. Oh, man. She found
some. Did she say you got some problems?
I do have some problems.
Well, you knew the problem. Do you find more problems?
Oh, my God. It was like, oh.
Are sore. You sore or are you?
I am sore a little bit, but it's a good sore.
Okay.
I'm like, I'm moving a lot better. Yeah. She did some neck things. I told her that she was fantastic. Yeah. Go to Birmingham.WoodhouseSpas.com, Birmingham.WoodhouseSpas.com. And I think she really liked the fact that I had no underwear on. I got in there. And
did you really have no underwear?
Yeah, I went commando. Okay. I'm letting it all hang out.
Yeah, okay.
But the problem was, is I was all hanging out in the quiet room. Because, you know, the robes they got, you know, they don't have robes for 6 foot. Well, they do have robes for 6 foot. They have 14 shoes. And so I'm sitting there,
spreading
and I was laying down and trying to keep my legs closed.
Yeah.
And then I got on the cut and I sat like this, and I realized I was pulling a Friends episode where I was letting it all hang out. I didn't realize it. I didn't feel a breeze or anything. I heard the music and stuff like that. And then when I got up, but then the minute I got on the table, because you go face down first.
Yeah. It's good.
I sensed, even though I told her something, I was kind of quiet.
I sensed
that she was really digging the fact that I was a pro. She's like, oh, this guy trusts me enough not to wear his underwear, and he trusts me enough. He's done this before. This is old. I sensed it.
You're so funny.
Because she went right up the edge, and she was really getting it, and she couldn't have done that if I was wearing my Hanes boxer briefs. So I was feeling pretty good about that. And then, of course, I did the turnover. I said, you don't need to leave the room. I know, Scott. She goes, no, I have to leave the room. I said, no, you don't. She goes, no. You need to get comfortable. And so I was like, because I was all good.
You know? Where are we?
No, Woodhouse Day Spa. I'm doing a show with Stuart Rome to the wind room.
This is from head down to that?
It was, and I got the 110-minute jobber, man. I got 2 hours.
Is that nice?
If you're going to go get a massage.
Go, yeah.
I was counting the minutes. Because they do, you're on your back,
yep.
They do right arm, left arm,
yep.
Right leg, left leg.
Yep.
And then you flip over and you can do the math 15 minutes
yep.
on
yeah,
each.
Yeah.
And I was like, and so when they were getting the last body part, I was like, oh. And then she did an extra feet thing.
Yeah.
I threw a couple of $20 bills in it, and she did a face thing, and it was fantastic.
I was
going to 905-7676, 905-7676. I'm telling you. And I know people get uncomfortable and they have to go and put the locker in. Oh, by the way, I show up.
Look, man,
we have
so pivoted off the topic.
I show up. Land. No, it's about neck care, right? I show up, and I go in the locker room, And they put your name on the locker with a little sign written in.
It's so nice.
Tony, and then the name next to me was Josh. And I'm like, that son of a bitch is coming in and getting a massage with me today. Because the last time you and I went to get a massage, not together, it was Tony and Josh. We were side by side. And I was like, I'll bet she's coming in to get a massage today. And it was another dude named Josh. That was, and I kind of looked at it and I was like, do you have the same signs we had when we were here like a year ago? She's like, no, we just put those up this morning. I said, is Josh Claypool coming in? She goes, who? And I said, Josh Claypool. She goes, no. And she's in to do a job. Anyway, oh, it was fantastic. Anyway, my point being is will the National Football League make a change and start calling more targeting callings on offense? And I hope they don't. Because, again, this was such – this happens more in Major League Baseball and polo. And I'm like, I can't remember it happening in Major League Baseball and polo. There's a reason for that. It's incredibly rare. He was 24. He's healthy. And it was just one of those really super freaky situations, super scary. And we don't take anything away from the fact that we want him to live and he deserved to live and he was doing something he loves. And I hope, like hell, he plays football again because I know he loves it. But you brought up a really interesting point. And we tried to get into this about 10 years ago when the whole CTE, when I first started doing sports radio, there were three different types of concussions. There was a one or two.
Right. Three.
One was like, don't worry about it. Drink some water. You're fine. Number two, you probably need to sit out a couple plays. You get your head banged up. Number three, obviously you're going to be out for a while. We now realize that concussions are almost like being on the autistic spectrum. There is no exact... Mm-hmm. Was he throwing up? Did he see stars? Right. How long was he, you know, and we know that it gets worse and worse every time, unlike autism. But we realize that every single situation is different. They're all different. And so you can't put a number on it. This is not a hurricane thing. You know, you don't know what the storm surge is going to be when it comes to head injuries. So I'm hoping that people will look at this as a learning experience, realize how rare it is, and it was incredibly unfortunate, but it doesn't change the way we enjoy the game. I was talking to Trent Richardson just a few days ago, and he's like, Tony, the game has just gotten so much different just in the last 5 or 6 years since he left the league. He said the guys are so much bigger, so much stronger, so much faster, and maybe it's going to take, usually, Josh, you know this from a psychological standpoint, it usually takes a traumatic experience.
Yes.
It takes a flood surge of 14 feet in New York City to realize we've got work to do. We've got to change things so it doesn't happen again. It may not be for another 100 years, but we don't ever want to see this happen again.
Right.
And so in this one instance, we learn from it. We move on. Hopefully he's going to be fine. I think he will be. But to all of a sudden, and this is coming. This is coming. My 18-year-old son has already had a concussion. He's not playing football anymore.
Right.
Or my son had a torn.
Yep.
And they love what they do. And again, like everything, every situation is different. You and I were going back and forth, and I was like, you know what's best for your 18-year-old son, or your 16-year-old son, or your 6-year-old son who's in Pee Wee Ball. You know what's best for him? Are you going to be the one to tell him, yes, you're getting letters from Auburn, Alabama, UAB when he's 16 years old, but you're not getting a scholarship in football? I don't care how successful or what a high school star you are, because I love you too much. I don't know how that flies with somebody who can't make that decision on their own.
Yeah.
And with that being said, you take all the information that you have, that you can find, and you make that risk assessment.
Yes.
I'm not going to tell my child, if my son today came to me and said, I want to join the armed forces.
Well,
I'm passionate about it. I love this country, and I want to join the armed forces. I'm not going to tell him no, because I know where his passion is. What are the reasons? Why are you doing what you want to do, and is it something you want to do for the rest of your life? In football, you usually have about 10 years, and you're done anyway. You move on.
Yeah, but you're making – I mean, yes, but the
– if Max were to be a police officer, you would show your concern.
Yes.
You would say, hey, listen, I want to be a school teacher. More school teachers have died – in 2022 than football players. There's a risk assessment with anything that you're passionate about.
Yes, I don't disagree with what you're saying, but you're using examples, even with your first one. If your kid is 16 and 17, they're getting recruitment letters from everybody and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, that's a factor because and then let's just add in, it's their passion, plus maybe you're not in a financial position, or even if you are in a financial position to do it. But for every kid who that's happening for, There are thousands of kids who are playing. They ain't getting any recruitment letters. So now the question becomes, I mean, this is where the question becomes, is it a sport, whether it's basketball, soccer, whatever, is it a sport that is the risks, not of death? I mean, again, I hate when people go, not of this injury, but of three concussions. I have a athlete that I work with on the West Coast who's a water polo player. He's a goalie. He's been concussed three different times, okay? And by this third one, he was having chronic headaches. He loves the sport.
Yeah.
But it became a situation where the headaches were so bad that despite wanting to play, I mean, it was a collective family decision. He was a senior. He's like, I'm going to go to college. I'm not playing.
Yeah.
I'm not playing. But the thing that I don't like, and I will say this when we're on the news, this whole thing about, well, it's, you know, it's a great sport and this is what my kid wants to do. And if this is what my kid wants to do, then I'm like, oh, shut up. Like, be a parent. Think about the relative risk and think about not just because it's what your kid wants to do. That's your job is to be the parent, is to make difficult calls. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying in every case, don't let them do it.
Yeah.
But I don't like the let's get behind the all-Americanness of it. You have to put that aside and you have to ask the question, is it worth the relative risk? And we're not talking about your kid playing in the NFL. Yeah. We're talking about your kid playing at whatever junior level playing tackle. Is it worth it? Is it worth it to put your kid in that risk even if, and then this is where I'm, you know, I'll stop, but even if your kid says, I really want to do this.
Yeah. Mm. I agree with you and hopefully you're on the same page. And as a parent, you tell them your concerns about what they're doing, and you know how important it is to these kids.
Well, and I know Jay's talked about whole flag football.
Sure.
And the benefits of playing flag football as compared, not instead of, but
they're doing that in the Pro Bowl this year. It's stupid.
Are they really?
Yeah, they're playing flag football in the Pro. Yeah, I don't know if they're actually playing the game itself, but I know they're doing a flag football thing. And I'm sorry.
You
get a bunch of celebrities playing flag football, it's one thing.
But we don't want to see it. Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
we don't want to see
it.
What I think is the litmus test here, and I don't think you're going to see it in like mass waves. We've seen a couple of examples of it. You'll have to help me on the names of the players. What's his face? From the Colts, the quarterback, who retired super early.
Andrew Luck.
Right.
Now he's talking about coming back, by the way. Because the Colts need a quarterback.
That's right. But I think that's kind of where you see it. It's
J.J. Watt?
Yeah. Do you see it in players at any level? And you and I talked about this. A kid who is good in three sports,
mm-hmm.
who says, oh, I love all three, but, you know, I'm going to play basketball.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be in that position.
There are some players that do that. If they're good enough to play at that next sport because they don't want to take the pounding.
Yeah.
There's a couple of players that want to take a pounding every single day, and I get that. You know, you got Deion Sanders and Bo Jackson that play two sports.
Right.
Just from
that's what I'm saying. That's where we have to be. There's a difference between, and you've heard almost every single pro football player and pro athlete talk about this. And I think this is our responsibility as fans. Yes, we're putting the money, you know, it's our dollars that are sort of funding this. There is a huge difference between us and them.
Yeah.
And this is not about all of us together. This is about them playing the game and them making decisions for themselves about what's best for them. Not us sitting here in the bleachers going, oh, I can't believe that we're making the game into a wimpy game.
Well, and one of the things I think we have to take into effect for sure, because this is a job.
Yes.
And they're making millions of dollars a year.
Most
of them are at this point. I think the league minimum is 700 grand. So, and your second contract is always your big contract. When you get to your second contract, you can pull an Andrew Luck at the age of 30.
Yes, you can.
You're set.
I realize
$13 million a year ain't the $13 million you and I have, because half is going to taxes and they have
houses. No, but that's a good point.
But when you see a player like J.J. Watt, who's got a lot left in the tank, and says, you know what, I'm hanging it up.
Yep.
The late night show host, Cordon, what's his name?
James Gordon
was asked yesterday why he's giving up the late night situation. He's making 70 something million dollars or whatever. And he got home, he's doing a Netflix movie, right, or a documentary. Got home on a Sunday. His kid's sitting there having a bowl of cereal. And says, "Daddy, are you home today?" "Oh, no, son, I got to fly to L.A. I got to get this thing done, da-da-da-da-da." Mm-hmm. And he said, the look on his son's face.
Yep.
Good. You know what? My son's going to be home for another 5 years before he goes, yep, off to college. And I'm not going to miss that.
Yep.
Pat Benatar did it with rock and roll. At, yep, her height, she said, "You know what? I'm having a baby, and I'm not going to be on the road with my baby." Now, both those individuals were wealthy beyond our means.
Right, and they could have hung it up at any time, yes.
Would you be willing to do that at the age of 21 into your second contract? Now, that's a different story. Knowing risk versus reward, I can put this out for another 3 or 4 years. Hopefully, I can stay healthy enough, and I can make millions of dollars,
yes,
and take that time off. That being said, you'll have types like Tom Brady who just can't put it away. He's 45. He's like, he wants to keep playing. And he's missing a lot of things his three kids are going through as well. And some people would say that's incredibly selfish. You won 7 Super Bowls. You've done everything your age. You're the best quarterback.
Well, now he's divorced, too.
You're the GOAT. You're divorced.
He's divorced.
How much more do you need to lose to realize maybe it's time to hang it up? But I'm not Tom Brady. And Lord knows we've talked enough about how we think black people should feel. I'm not black. I can tell you how I think they should feel or how I think I'd feel if I was black, but I'll never know what it's like to be black. I'll never know what it's like to be Tom Brady. I'll never know what it's like. And so I can give my opinion, but I'm telling you, when you put your feet in the shoes of a 24-year-old Buffalo Bills player who's played 14 snaps or 14 games this year, some people would think he's absolutely crazy to come back. If he's got the opportunity to come back, he will come back to play football.
He may. I'm not sure that he will, for sure.
Well, and if that GoFundMe thing goes, I think the GoFundMe thing is great. Don't get me wrong, I think it's great.
Well, we do that.
But I think it's,
yeah,
it's our way of being part of the story.
Well, thoughts and prayers.
We don't know tomorrow. What can I do to help?
Here's $5.
I'm sending $20 to his, which is great.
Yes.
But we went from this $2,500 thing, now all of a sudden.
$6 million.
$7.5 million,
yeah. You is that what, crazy?
Josh, you know what happens when a lot of money comes in?
Yeah.
It's almost impossible. I was on the phone this morning with a guy who works for a pharmaceutical company. He was talking about the corruption of pharmaceutical. Mm-hmm. He's like, when a lot of money comes in, the vultures start coming in, everyone starts taking their piece, and it normally doesn't. I'm not saying that not multi-billion dollar corporations aren't run correct, but when there's a lot of money, there's a lot of fat, too. The one thing I will say this about the DeMar Hamlin thing, we'll talk about it in 15 minutes, and we got to go.
Yeah.
The first thing I thought of, I had the same exact feeling. I'm sitting there, my son came over to watch the game. I'm a big Cincinnati Bengals fan. Right. By the way, that Bengals field, DeMar Hamlin got banged up. It was also the same play where we had the fingers in the face with Tua Tagovailoa. They may have to close that field.
Oh, that was the same, yeah.
The same.
Yeah.
Bad things happen in the jungle, man. Welcome to the jungle, my friend. I was talking to my son. He came over to watch the game. We watched, and we were disappointed, obviously, because it was for first place in the AFC. I don't know if they're going to make the game up, which is going to be into something else that we're going to be talking about. They need to play that game. Now, there may be some ramifications this weekend based on the Bengals lose. It's not going to matter because Baltimore was so... But people wanted to see that game. It was the biggest game of the year. All I could think about was Dale Earnhardt Sr.
Yep.
When he hit the wall...
Yep.
It was the same exact thing, but it was in a race car.
Yep.
It didn't look bad.
Nope.
We couldn't believe what was happening.
Yep.
Of course, he wasn't wearing the Hans device, but of course he's not going to die because people don't die in NASCAR.
Nope.
Not while they're driving.
Nope.
It's not going to happen. And then when you saw it get kind of quiet, you start seeing tears from other drivers.
That is what I'm telling you.
And you're like, okay, something's really wrong here. This guy's not getting out of the car. And then the ambulance, I got goosebumps talking about it because I can remember exactly what it was back in 2001 when I saw that. It reminded me so much of that instance where, okay, we've got, and they're going to brakes every 3 minutes.
Yep.
Nothing's news happening, and it scared me. One final thing, and we brought this up, and you sent me, you sent me the tweet this morning.
Oh, yeah. Which one?
Dan Orlovsky.
Oh, I thought you meant the
one on ESPN, and I talked about it yesterday on Facebook, and I loved it.
I thought you meant Beastie Boys.
Dan Orlovsky, I love, gets on thoughts and prayers, and thoughts and prayers, and that's great. It's better to say thoughts and prayers go out to this player than not say anything at all.
Right.
Even people who don't pray were saying thoughts and prayers, because it's the right thing to say.
Yep.
He's like, enough of the shit. Let's put my money where my mouth is. He said a prayer live on ESPN. I thought it was great. I was pissed that I didn't think to do it first, to be honest with you. I was like, damn it, as a prayer, I should have thought. Instead of saying thoughts and prayers,
there was a pause, too. I mean, he...
It was great.
It was great because it wasn't... You could tell it wasn't pre-planned. There was enough awkward pauses on his part. And I would say awkward pause.
That's what made it even better.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And you could see I'm blanking who the hosts were. There was a little bit of that kind of...
Kenny Smith walked off the TNT set in the Black Lives Matter, he knew he was going to do it.
Right.
And you could tell. And it looked staged a little bit. It was great, but it was staged. This was not staged.
This was very awkward.
This was real.
And it,
it was great. And so I post that video.
Yes.
And it gets flagged for being sensitive material. That's what you sent me this morning. That's what I said, incredible. That tweet, you hit the tweet.
Oh, is sensitive.
Or on Facebook Live yesterday. Got flagged.
Because it was prayer?
Yeah.
Really? Well, Twitter's having a lot of fun.
The tweet you're about ready to accept or see contains sensitive material. And then it takes you to settings, where you have to turn your setting off so you can actually see the tweet. And I was like, are you shitting me? Is this for real? I mean, when we consider prayer a sensitive material tweet in the world we live in right now, that scares the hell out of me. I was just
I can tell you this. Listen. I can tell you this because I am very sensitive to this. We live in the Bible Belt. There's lots of people who pray, and they'll say wonderful prayers. They'll say, Lord, God, whatever. And I'm always listening as a Jew, how are you going to end this prayer? Mm-hmm. Because from your faith, in Jesus' name.
In Jesus' name we pray.
And where I get, for me, where I find both respect and on the flip side, I don't like it, is if there is a prayer happening in a known mixed faith setting, and again, if you're atheist and you don't believe in God, I want you to take into account the fact that Jesus for me is not.
Yeah. That's fine. You can pray the way you want to.
No, I know. But what I appreciated about this was it was generic enough that it spoke to, it could speak to a lot of people.
One of the Buffalo Bills players actually said this the night of that I thought was really interesting. And I know he's kind of catching some flack too, but I'm totally cool with it. Because in several programs I've been part of, we talk about it all the time. If you realize that you're not the end all in this world, and we've had this conversation, you and you believe there's a higher power out there, whatever that is, whatever your God wants to be, you believe there's a higher power out there that's creating everything that's happening in the world, then you're on the right track to whatever spiritual growth you want to have in your life. There was a football player that said afterwards, we realize that we're seeing something that's never happened before, and we need to reach out to our higher power, whatever that higher power could be. Whatever. It was very,
I like that.
Generic. And if that's God for you,
it's inclusive.
Yeah, if it's a God of my knowing, then perfect. Right. That's my higher power.
It's inclusive. So
it's inclusive.
I mean, the only person was the atheist.
Yeah.
No, it was fine. I mean, which again, that's the only.
And my point was yesterday that we are taught to pray in silence,
yes,
to pray alone.
Yes.
But the Bible also teaches that, not to get preachy, but it's okay to plant seeds, and that it's proper to uplift his word in any scenario you see fit. And so when I see people, I can't speak a sentence in my life without thanking my Lord,
praise
you, because
that's you.
I know,
that's
for me,
you.
I know for me it works. For people that feel reluctant to convey their sense of faith in a particular situation because they're afraid that it's going to make someone in the room uncomfortable, I think is really sad. Mm-hmm. For the same reason they can convey their beliefs to me in a setting where it's proper, okay? There's a reason why every Buffalo Bill was on an even, in a sense of prayer out there. Whether that's your higher power, whatever that is.
Yeah.
You realize there's something bigger than you out there that could potentially save this man's life. Pray to it, whatever that is.
Right.
And so that's all said.
I agree.
A lot of people are like, and to Twitter's point, and a friend of mine is like, maybe Elon Musk will change that. Maybe you should, because there is so much nasty shit on social media, and it doesn't get flagged.
No.
And you post someone praying on TV, and that gets flagged for sensitive. Now you just, I'm like, really? Seriously?
Yeah.
You know, anything done in love shouldn't be flagged. Anything done in fear and hatred should be flagged. But you can get on there and slam anybody all you want and call them names, and that doesn't get flagged. You put a photo or a video of a guy praying on national TV and it gets flagged for being sensitive material, that's sensitive. We are way too sensitive towards our sensitive materials, you know. So anyway. All right. We do. We got to get to Fox 6. We're going to be in Fox 6 by 9:30 this morning. Thanks, Dr. Josh Klapo, and thanks to everyone who watched this morning here on Facebook Live. We do it every Thursday here at Curry and Klapo Show. If you missed any of the show, go to Tony Curry Radio Podcast. We're on every major agency out there. Wherever you watch your podcast, look up Curry and Klapo or Tony Curry Radio. That's Curry with a K, K-U-R-R-E. We'll be doing a show with Stuart Rohn today. One of our most listened to podcasts, certainly here in the state, is Mark Ingram, called the UAV Director's Chair. Got a great question, info@TonyCurryRadio.net, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. You can email me anytime, and I'll read your emails on the Curry and Klapo Show, for the Damon Johnson Show, for any of the 14, 15 shows we do. Wanted to know about Bartell Arena. Basketball program's doing really well. I think they're 11-2 or 12-2. You know, we built this new stadium now for the football program. What's going on with Bartell Arena? Maybe it's time to sink some money into old Bartell Arena.
You can ask that question.
I'm going to ask that question today.
By the way, quick. Nobody cares. Shout out to the College of Charleston Cougars, who are nationally ranked 23.
All right, and what?
Basketball.
Oh, nice.
Auburn is ranked 22.
College of Charleston's always been good, though.
Well, not this good.
Yeah.
They're going to go dancing.
Auburn took it last
night. So anyway,
night.
I just needed it.
Auburn took it last night at Georgia.
Yeah.
All right, have yourself a wonderful day. Thanks for watching, and we'll get after it. Al Cooper says, what's he say?
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby, Al. Have a great day, bro. Talk to you soon. Check us out on Fox 6. Go from Facebook Live to WBRC Fox 6, best television station in the world. They're going to have us on in about 10 minutes right here on Curry and Klapo. Love you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.